From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the seventh day of February 2014. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. In Atchison, Kansas, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Ben Pruce at the Everly, Iowa facility that belongs to the Andersons. Discuss the weather forecast with Ed Keezer, and we'll hear all about this week's passage of the Farm Bill, a couple of the commodity titles trying to tease out some of the things that might impact producers and landowners as they relate to the commodity titles, or those things that are termed as ARC and PLC. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
In Chicago for a Friday afternoon, let's check in on the numbers. For the settlement prices, March wheat today down 3.25 cents in the lead option at 577.5. July at 583.75, down 2.25. The March corn at 444.25, up 0.25 cents, rather a penny and a quarter. May futures at 450, up 1.5. And July corn at 455.5, up 2 for the day. September at 457, a penny and 3/4 higher. In December contract, $4.60, a settlement price up 1.75 for December corn, the new crop. January, or rather March, at 469, up 2. March beans at 1331.5, up 5.75. The May at 1317.5, up 5.75. In July, $12.98, up 5.25. November beans, $11.21.75, up 3.25 for the day. And the January futures there at $11.26.5 for next year, up 3 cents. Bean meal futures at $4.46.40, up 40 cents. Bean oil at $38.57. That finished 9 cents lower on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in the February contract, $141.20, up $1.65. April futures at $140.40, that's up $1.32.5. And feeders finished $167.80, up 80 cents. April futures at $168.52.5 in the feeder cattle, $72.5 higher. And the lean hogs finished the February at $86.57.5, up 7.5 cents. April futures at $94.72.5, 52.5 cents higher. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media and comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the afternoon. Nearby contract, March at $99.80 a barrel. 89 cents a barrel, that is. Up $2.05. March, RBOB gasoline, or the wholesale price, at $2.74.7, up 6 and 4 tenths. And ethanol futures at $1.95.7, 3 and 8 tenths higher. The difference between the two, or the spread, is now 79 cents wide. That's 2 and 6 tenths of a cent wider than it was yesterday. And natural gas is down 12 and 2-tenths of a cent at $4.80.09 of a cent. Diesel fuel trading at $3.04.07, up 5 and 2-tenths of a cent. And gold futures finished $5.80 higher at $1,263.20 a troy ounce. The U.S. dollar at 80.69 is down 0.21 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. Mostly sunny skies today. A high of just 11 degrees, wind chill values between negative 1 and 4, on a southwest wind at 5 to 8 miles an hour. And then tonight, a 20% chance of snow after midnight, mostly cloudy, a low of 5 degrees, wind chills between 2 below and 3 degrees on a south wind. Saturday, snow likely mainly after the noon hour, cloudy, a high of 21 degrees, wind chills between 3 below and 7 above, and a south-southeast wind at 5 to 8 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation tomorrow at 60%. New snow accumulation of less than a half an inch. Saturday night, a 40% chance of snowfall. That'll come before midnight. Cloudy and a low of 14 degrees. Sunny on Sunday. Rather, mostly cloudy on Sunday with a high of 20 degrees on a northwest wind at 7 to 10. And on Sunday evening, partly cloudy and a low of 1 below. Now, Monday, that's where the sunny skies come at, mostly sunny and cold with a high of just 8 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour right here on Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon, the 7th day of February 2014. On the phone line from Atchison, Kansas, at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting is Mike Zuzlo. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Is it cold there today?
You know, it was 1 degree this morning, and I felt like it was a heat wave.
It's been cold. It's been really cold. Are you due like we are for more severe cold next week?
No, you know, I think there's one more little shot coming, but one of the things that came in on the noontime models was a little bit more moderation in the temperatures, Todd, and I think that's going to start in our area and then move and migrate over towards you by the time we get maybe day six, day seven, and that's probably something that the trade picked up on today. We had a January thaw last month. The weather people I work with would suggest, it'll be interesting to hear what Ed has to say, would suggest that maybe we won't have much more than a February thaw, and then we'll be back at it by the end of the month with another cold wave. So, unfortunately, it looks like this is just kind of a moderation and a little bit of a thaw like we had a month ago.
In the form of the trade picked up on that weather pattern today, what does that mean to you? What happened that you saw it in the marketplace?
Well, you know, we took a big, big spill late in the session or right after the midday weather models came out, and it looked a little bit warmer. And I wonder if that and the Canadian issue with the oat market and the Canadian logistics issues that had been pricing the market up, you know, substantially and lock limit up in the case of oats earlier this week, that started to wane as well. So I'm wondering whether the Canadian Canadian-related profit-taking came in at about the same time these midday weather models came in that suggested a little bit better weather in terms of less freeze damage, less cold damage, given that, you know, probably the western half of Kansas and most of the wheat area for Nebraska and Oklahoma aren't really getting much snow, so their snowpack and snow cover just isn't that much.
Yeah, can you take me through that oat thing just a bit? Because the March oats, while they did not settle above the March corn for today,
right?
They were above March corn earlier in the week.
Yeah, the simplest way to look at it from my standpoint was that the logistical issues in Canada, part of this relating to too many coal tankers being used with too few locomotives, and so there are therefore fewer grain cars available to the market up in Canada, caused these logistical issues. Weather played some role, and so I think what happened was the Japanese came in and started booking U.S. wheat instead of Canadian wheat. At least that's what the news wires were reporting, and also there was talk that the oat market was getting a strong export bid along with Milo, and all of this relating back to the lack of availability in Canada. So it was weather and train car related, so it was kind of transitory, and so by the end of the week, it seemed as though things were starting to free up some. It'll be a player again next week if those expectations aren't met and the grain isn't flowing better.
I know this is a small thing. Was it a weather, and you said train car, or was it a weather and a locomotive availability?
Yeah, without a doubt. The locomotives are being used up with more crude oil cars versus grain cars.
And thus the train cars weren't available because the locomotives couldn't pull them, but the cars themselves were probably available. It was about the logistics for locomotives and lack of locomotives to move cars, right?
Yeah, and it's very similar to what you're facing with the propane market over in your area, what you're facing with the road salt problem over in your area. All these things kind of tie back to the just-in-time type modeling that we see in the transportation and raw commodity industry. And if things are going well, that JIT situation works great and it saves a lot of money. But if the weather doesn't play ball with you, it becomes quite expensive. And I think that's something that the Chicago trade in the commodity markets are starting to wake up to, and especially given what we're seeing in the Midwest and how long this cold has lasted and the fact that Peoria shut down in terms of being able to get salt up the river, and that's starting to cause some really big price spikes in salt and, like I said, in propane. These are big issues in the commodity markets this year that usually we don't have to deal with, and the reason we have to deal with it is because the commodity markets are in a just-in-time type mindset. They're a lot like the automotive manufacturers that started this 20 years ago. It seems as though the grain and raw material commodities markets are doing this more now as well.
Yeah, except that our infrastructure is not as reliable, I guess.
Yeah, and it says that, you can take risk premium out of the market as long as you've got everything running great. But as soon as something goes wrong, then that risk premium probably needs to get put back in. And that's exactly what's happening in the cash market. Unfortunately, it's price spikes, and it's really doing some damage to some people.
Yeah, so how quickly does it come out? So because it's infrastructure related or the ability to move product around, and that does get fixed at some point and probably gets fixed pretty quickly.
Yeah, I had this conversation in kind of a more agriculture-related area with the 28 pricing. You know, 28 starting to go up pretty substantially because of natural gas, because of propane. That may not work prices back down until the springtime, so it may, in some cases, take another 2 to 3 months before you unwind the cash market. In the case of Canada, they're thinking that's going to ease up by next week. I think this goes back to 28 prices. My take on them is that, yeah, you probably need to get something locked in from a standpoint of what you plant and what you put on right at planting. But if there are delayed plantings because Mother Nature keeps things wet and all of a sudden certain sections of the Corn Belt don't get planted on time, some of that 28 may not be needed as much, or some of the anhydrous may not be needed as much. So maybe don't book everything yet, maybe just a good chunk, and then see if there's going to be planting delays or not.
Hey, on the wheat, you mentioned that while they backed off prices today because of maybe some better weather conditions, I guess, that they still finished the week, the March and the July, both up around more than 20 cents. Is this a pricing opportunity at all?
Not for selling, I don't think, Todd. I mean, this is where the flat price, like you said, the beans won the day for the week on the flat pricing, with the March beans up 49 and like you said, March wheat up 22. But on a percentage basis, wheat actually beat beans this week up 3.9%. I think those crop conditions in Kansas and Oklahoma, and the fact that we tripled the very poor conditions in Kansas and quadrupled the very poor conditions in Oklahoma, would suggest that inadequate moisture and the lack of wheat feeding that the cattle guys have been telling us about and that the cattle on feed report have been verifying to us would suggest that we're a long way from making an average crop, meaning 45 bushels. And I think this is where this could be more like a 2011 crop, where you're in the low 40s. And if your hard red wheat acres do get torn up some because of this weather and you see some abandonment, then you're talking about a lot tighter crop. So I still think we're 50, maybe even 80 cents away from needing to price any new crop wheat.
And we are on the bottom end of the range and down at contract lows, I suppose.
Yes, and I think this is where the outside markets are starting to come together a little bit better, and that's been something that's plagued the wheat market as well. And, you know, something like Yum Brands, they came out this week with some updated information. First, they said the avian flu had not hurt their consumption at KFC in China and places like that, which is good news. But that stock jumped 9% this week and had one of its best performances I've seen in probably 7 or 8 months.
You mentioned the soybeans. Speaking of life of contracts, the bean meal set a life of contract high this week. They were up $20.30 at $4.46.40 in the lead option.
It's been a long time since I've seen a newswire like Reuters report that Claypool, Indiana, had no soy meal to offer for February and that they had pulled bids on Thursday due to tight supplies. And when you look at the supply-demand report on Monday, realize that we were coming into this month's report with only 16.5 days worth of bean demand or bean supply to meet usage. And if we cut these ending stocks anymore, we'll be down around 14 days or 15 days. Historically, the market really takes note when you get into those low numbers.
All right. Hey, thanks much. We'll talk to you again for Commodity Week not too long from right now.
Sounds great, sir.
Mm-hmm. That's Mike Zuzalo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Your Director of Ag Programming, Dave Dickey, is here now. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, a coalition of farm, food processor, and biotech groups has formed to push for a federal law requiring only the Food and Drug Administration be allowed to determine if ingredients from a biotech crop pose a health or safety risk that would demand a label. FDA has never determined any food poses a health or safety risk simply because it contains ingredients derived from biotech crops. Food and agricultural groups in the coalition want a statutory requirement for FDA to review biotech traits before they are marketed. Then, FDA would also create a single national standard for labeling foods with biotech crops that would come only after an FDA determination that such a label is needed for a particular product. As much as 80% of U.S. food contains at least some ingredients from biotech crops. The push for national legislation comes after food and biotech companies have spent nearly $70 million over the last 2 years to defeat biotech labeling ballot measures in California and Washington State. More than 30 states have seen bills introduced that would require biotech labels. President Barack Obama is launching a new program to help American farmers and rural businesses boost their exports. The Made in Rural American initiative would connect rural businesses with federal resources that can help sell their products and services abroad. According to a draft plan, the president plans to direct federal agencies to take several steps in the next 9 months toward that goal. They include hosting 5 regional forums for rural businesses, training Agriculture Department staff in all 50 states to advise on export opportunities, and putting on a national conference to highlight successful projects. Russian potash producer OAO Uralkali today says it has purchased a 25% stake in a company that owns a Brazilian port terminal as it moves to strengthen its presence in the South American country. Brazil has slowly become a key battleground market for the world's potash miners since Uralkali dropped out of a trading partnership last summer that ended an informal global pricing cartel. Terms of the deal were not released. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, that second program. We'll air immediately following this program today on AM 580, our home radio station, but many radio stations carry it, and you can listen to it now even earlier than ever before on our website at willag.org. I kind of think that may be one of the best ways to get hold of it at willag.org. Our panelists today will include Mike Zuzolo, along with Jackie Vakes and Dan Zwicker. It doesn't get better than that trio, does it? Oh, and we'll throw in Glenn Ring from Glenn Ring Enterprises just for fun to Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at what's happening in the marketplace. Comes up next on our home station and up on our website at willag.org by about 4 o'clock this afternoon. While you're there at Willag, by the way, we're still trying to finish off our John Deere trip, and we need 5 more folks to go. That's it. Just 5 more, although you have to sign up today at willag.org. Look for Follow the Corn John Deere. We're headed up there to see the tractors and the combines being made in Moline and Waterloo. It's kind of all-inclusive, all except for one meal, I think. About $550 a person. If you want to go, it's a great bus trip, March 10, 11, and 12, but I need you to sign up today, right now, in fact. So don't tarry. Find the numbers. If you don't have access to the website, call this number, 217-333-7300. That's the number for the radio station, and they will give you the proper number to call, so you can book that today. Follow the Corn, John Deere. We need to know this afternoon. Now, up next, you know, one of the compromises reached in the 2014 version of the United States Farm Bill, as you'll hear, centers on how to count acreage as it relates to commodity programs. Any policy passed with bipartisan support by the United States Congress is a series of compromises. The 2014 Farm Bill has plenty of them. Farmers will find one of those compromises in the commodity title programs. University of Illinois Ag Policy Specialist Jonathan Kappas says the Senate and the House have had different opinions on how to count acres.
This was a big, big compromise point. The Senate, so the House had been all on planted acres. The Senate had a revenue program on planted acres and a price, the target price program on base acres. And this goes back to the 1996 reforms and the issue of having whether the program is coupled to your production, coupled to your planting decisions, and what that might do to markets. The Midwest, particularly soybeans and corn, producer groups and farmers individually and their members of Congress were adamantly opposed to particularly a fixed price program on the planted acre, which can lead in a low price scenario, can really lead to distortion issues and having farmers, you know, the old saying, be planning for the government payment or planning for the program.
The compromise is that the Title I Farm Safety Net programs called ARC, or Agriculture Risk Coverage, and PLC, or Price Loss Coverage, were both decoupled from actual planted acreage. ACAPA says this means they end up being more of an approximation of risk-based assistance than actual risk management. Here's how he says farmers and landowners can begin to get a handle on the programs.
The ACRE program at the state level has similarities to the ARC county. The SURE program from 2008 has similarities to the ARC individual. Of course, the countercyclical program is the price loss program now. Those are pretty much that's a standard type program. So it's going to be you're going to want to see some ideas of how this is going to operate on your farm, run some numbers, get a sense of that. I have no doubt that the university and the farm doc team here will be working extensively to try to provide as much information and as much of a decision tool capability as we can. And then, of course, farmers are certainly used to sorting through crop insurance decisions and how that plays out on your farm. And so the other challenge will be sort of integrating all of this together. And it's going to be a lot this first year, but I think we can... I think we can do our best to make that decision something that you can understand.
And here's the quick takeaway. First crop insurance decisions to be made next month remain untouched by the legislation. There will be a new twist added next year. Secondly, the new Title I programs will affect this year's crops. Farmers and landowners will have decisions to make sometime between now and harvest. Finally, the ag economists at the University of Illinois, most land grants for that matter, are already at work running simulations trying to tease out just how the programs work in order to provide guidance related to 2014 Farm Bill decisions. Those choices will be locked in for the life of the bill. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check now the cash grain market. On the phone line is Ben Pruce. He's at the Anderson's facility in Everly, Iowa. Good cold afternoon to you, Ben.
And the same to you, Todd.
Ethanol plants hunting up corn, I suspect, in your area.
You know, I'll tell you what, we have seen about a dime drop in basis. They've got coverage. Our nearest ethanol facility is out on Feb and March.
Oh, so they're just not worried about it at this point. They're
filled
up.
No. They and the farmers, they're just long corn here for the time being.
Did it surprise everybody that happened?
No. For those of us that pay attention to what yields are doing in the countryside, we kind of foresaw this coming just a little bit. But I think everybody is still waiting. You talk to the producers on a daily basis, and they say, well, we're short corn. Well, how much corn do you have? Well, I have all of it. You can just repeat that conversation on a daily basis.
Yeah. So what are your bids for the day?
Today we are 432 cash corn and 1291 cash beans.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Ben Pruce is with the Andersons. He's at their Everly, Iowa facility. Joined us on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes to take a look at the weather forecast from South America. Meteorologist Ed Kieser will be here. Again, you can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
It's National Fettuccine Alfredo Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1804, John Deere was born. An American inventor and manufacturer, he developed the first steel plow in 1838 and eventually founded John Deere & Company in 1868. As a blacksmith, he frequently repaired the wood and cast iron plows broken by the heavy clay soils of the eastern U.S. Deere's steel plows solved the problem. Originally, he used imported English steel for his plows, but he converted to U.S. steel when Pittsburgh steel plants could provide a suitable product. Deere also manufactured harrows, drills, cultivators, and wagons. In 1875, Sir Chester Beatty was born, an American-born, naturalized British mining engineer. He perfected a method for extracting copper from low-grade ore. In 1899, Hans Jenn was born, a Swiss agricultural chemist. He developed numerical functions to describe soil in his book, Factors of Soil Formation. The five factors, climate, that's temperature and moisture, organisms, relief, described as topography, parent material, that's the type of bedrock or sediment, and time. In 1938, Harvey Firestone died. His innovations included non-skid tire treads and farm tractor tires. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This program is a production of Illinois Public Media. We're located here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Now here's Ed Kieser with a look at the South American weather forecast.
We have extreme weather for crops in South America to talk about. It's flooding in some fields in Argentina, while it's unusually hot and dry over a large portion of Brazil. Of course, extreme weather typically does not bode well for crops. The rainfall pattern over time in Argentina has been problematic this growing season, going from too dry to plant, to too wet to plant, and then to too dry again. Now Argentina is back in a wet mode. Frequent bouts of showers and thunderstorms have occurred in the past week, and that will continue into the coming week. Soybeans needed rain and have now gotten it. The issue now turns to flooding. With frequent heavy rainfall expected to continue into the middle of next week, many fields in high production areas will flood. At this point, it appears that the adverse weather in Argentina this season has impacted corn more than soybeans. However, if drier weather does not come soon, flooding will adversely affect more and more beans. At least a break in the rain does appear likely later next week. In Brazil, early planted crops, including the first crop and double crop areas, fared well, but extreme weather is likely to reduce late planted full season and second season crops, including much of the safrinha corn. An unusually large and strong upper air ridge of high pressure is covering eastern Brazil. With the exception of the state of Mato Grosso, all production areas of Brazil and Paraguay have been hot and dry this week. This unusually dry period of weather will last into at least the middle of next week. Toward the end of the week, some showers and thunderstorms are possible, especially south and west, across Rio Grande do Sul, Santa Catarina, and Mato Grosso do Sul. However, from Sao Paulo northward into Goiás, Minas Gerais, and Bahia, hot and dry weather could last longer, putting late season crops in jeopardy. The markets will be monitoring the weather in Brazil closely in the coming week.
Our thanks to Ed Kieser, meteorologist, for his update of the South American weather forecast. Here are the weekly changes on the settlement prices from the CME Group. Friday to Friday, March corn up 10¼ cents at $4.44¼. December at $4.60, up a dime. March bean meal at $13.31½, 48¾ cents higher this Friday than last. And November at $11.21¾, up 17¼. March bean meal on the week at $446.40, up $20.30. That's a new contract high, life of contract high, even on the settlement price. March bean oil at $38.57, 93 cents higher. It's still struggling at the bottom of its range. March wheat at $5.77½, up 21¾. July at $5.83¾, up 22¼. April live cattle at $140.40, down 25, breaching its life of contract highs. March feeder cattle at $167.80, down $1.62½ on the week. And April lean hogs at $94.72½, down 7½ cents. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.